Welcome to Inside Out, the Naked Truth. Tonight we are coming to you live from our home in Lupin Lodge at the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I'm Errol Strider.
And Errol and I spend a great deal of our time uncovering our truth from the beliefs and perceptions we have been given by family, friends, institutions, and of course, media, because nudity is not just skin deep. We invite you into our conversation and exploration of these naked truths.
And sometimes the naked truth hurts, and it's uncomfortable, and it's squishy, and that's why we have to keep ourselves healthy to deal with it. And part of keeping ourselves healthy has to do with our sponsor, Go Raw Foods. It's like some about the healthiest food you can eat, Go Raw. And we thank you, Go Raw, all the folks over there, Rob and everyone. And you can find Go Raw at Whole Foods and Trader Joe's. And if you come over here, we'll make sure you have some Go Raw seeds. So maybe you will come over and visit us. We're going to treat you tonight as if you are here in our home, and which is really rainy.
Not in our home, outside our home.
But you never know. You know, I've seen the soft spots in the roof. You haven't.
Oh, don't tell me that. Now I'll never sleep.
One of the things that I'd like to talk about tonight, I want to talk about us, because you and I are like really in a pinch. And I also want to talk about this event that I went to this last weekend. It was really a very extraordinary event. It was put on by the progressives. They call themselves progressives or spiritual progressives, and it's kind of headed up by Michael Lerner. For those of you who may or may not know him, he wrote the book Politics of Meaning. He was involved with the Clinton administration. He was snidely and jokingly called the White House guru or the Clinton guru for a while, and he talks about that in his book that I'm reading, finished reading his third book that I've read, which is The Left Hand of God, in which he puts forth the premise that there's this right hand of God, which has a certain value system, which is very dominant and controlling. I'm oversimplifying a lot of information, but the essence of it is it's the conservative and religious right. How did they get to be right? I mean, like, why weren't they the left side initially? Why weren't they the left? Who decided that this group over here would be the right?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
This one's the left. I mean, based on what? But it's misleading, because the word conjures up so much, like right. I mean, they're lucky to have that word. Like left, left-handers, you know, and they used to think that people who were left-handed were like, you know, impure and something was wrong with them back in like the Middle Ages.
That's probably why they took the name right.
That's it. They're not stupid. As a matter of fact, another speaker was George Lakoff. I believe that's how you pronounce it. He wrote a book that I read called Don't Look at the Elephant, in which he looks at this same issue from a more scientific point of view, from what the brain is actually doing and how it functions. And he's a linguist, and he's very brilliant in his ability to have broken it down to the right standing for the strict father, and the left kind of representing the nurturing mother. I mean, being oversimplistic again. And because one of the big questions that came up is, why do people on the right vote against their economic interests? I mean, they have in the last couple of elections. And
what does that mean? Against their economic
interests? In other words, all things being equal, if they voted for like the Democrats, as opposed to the Republicans, they stand to benefit financially more because the program's being cut or this or that and the other. I don't want to get into all the details, but it would be economically more advantageous, it is thought. And that's the premise these people, the speakers, were operating from. So they really raised the question of, what about that and how do we respond to that? And one of the premises of Michael Lerner, he says that the left doesn't respond or even, It even ridicules the spiritual side. It's so cynical. And so it doesn't have any moral backbone and has been that way. Whereas the right take a very strong moral stand. And then, of course, you link up the right, religious right, and their strong moral stand. If people are looking for meaning, well, and spirituality, and his surveys say, yes, we are. 70% of it really would like that. And if the left doesn't provide that, then we'll go somewhere else. Because...
yeah, it's like throwing out the baby with the dirty laundry and the dirty diapers, because you have to take the best of everything to create a system that works, not just negate it just because it comes from these particular belief systems and that belief systems. But definitely we need a moral fiber.
So my question as a result of coming to this is, how do you awaken that moral fiber? Michael Lerner has put forth a whole plan, a whole program in his book, when you can read it, Left Hand of God, and he spoke to it briefly. And I look at that, and it's kind of like saying, well, doesn't the impulse to generosity and love and those qualities, which is what he's suggesting the left-hand side of God is about, what induces them? What motivates them in us? Can you come at them from the outside in? And as I say that, I am reminded that the Urantia book, which we refer to a lot, says some people come to the love of God through the love of people, and other people come to the love of people through the love of God. And I think that's an interesting perspective, but I do feel like something...
seems like you have to have both then.
Well, yes, either way, you're going to end up both. You have to. But if you don't have that spark ignited in you, then what quickens it? What does it take to quicken? And sometimes it's only affliction. You can't kind of get there from your mind and say, okay, I'm going to be a generously oriented person now, as opposed to the kind
of... but I know as well as you that affliction can create cynicism and bitterness just as easily as it creates generosity and empathy.
Takes your pick.
Yeah, I mean, so we go back to, like, what is that in us? And to me, it always comes back to evolution, you know, that there is a time in our evolving, in this evolving species that we are part of, when we're closer to that allness. We're closer to that light. We're closer to that thing that we want to call God or the mystery or whatever. And we're closer to it because that's what we do as we evolve. We keep getting going to the higher and higher levels of our brain.
I get that. You've shared that, and I really get that.
I never leave it out. I want to go over it and over and over it, because I don't think the people, what you're talking about, seem to take that into consideration.
Let me ask you.
You cannot make the baby walk if it's not ready to walk.
Okay, let me ask you out there, because you may be some of the people that we're talking about. You may find yourself on that moral right side, or you may look at it derisively and on the left. But what we're looking for is the backbone, and maybe you can help us find it. And you can call in at 888-627-6008 between now and the end of the hour. Because I feel this is crucial, and there's another contradiction, apparent contradiction, that comes up for me. Another speaker was Marianne Williamson. Again, wonderful, articulate woman. I quote her in my essay on uncommon sense, which I will talk to you about in a minute, because that's what I went there to share. And she's a student and teacher of A Course in Miracles. And she recently ran for office, Congress or something, out of the L.A. area, and she's a noted speaker. And I was reminded, having studied the course, that it says all you have to do is accept the at-one-ment for yourself. The rest is all an illusion. And so if that's the case, then how does it serve us to try and attempt to manipulate the illusion? What, in fact, will that accomplish, if
anything?
So unless you run for office purely for the fun of it. but there is this sense that came out of this community, and I want to honor that we can do something and we need to do something. Matthew Fox, another speaker, a friend of ours, has written 34 books. He spoke about harnessing, lassoing our anger. he points out throughout history all the great movements and the breaks in normalcy have been brought about by a certain righteous anger. I just saw Martin Luther, the movie, and was reminded he was so angry that the church was charging people. I forgot what they were called, but he was charging people.
Oh, yeah.
Charging people for these things. It'll come back to me. And that was kind of the last straw. And maybe that's what we're looking for to find that moral fiber, Rochelle, the last straw, and leading people to the last straw.
I have too many straws. I gotta get rid of all the straws to get to the last straw.
Are you seeing the last straw out there? Have you?
I was talking to a friend of mine who's also written several books, and she has a great deal of optimism that, you know, we can create change. And I believe that we plant seeds, and yes, change can come about. But what I look at is, like, where are you planting the seeds? If you don't plant the seeds in good soil, they just fall on the ground and wither and die or something. Or, you know, birds eat them, and that's good. Birds eating seeds are good because good for the birds, and they make little more birds. So we have a lot of birds.
Some birds.
But it's very important to have fertile soil, you know. And maybe Matt is right when he says that anger might be a fertile soil for some people, because what happens when we get angry, we're frustrated, we feel a sense that we can't do anything. And so if you give somebody something to do, which assuages their frustration and their anger, then they have something to do. Whether that doing truly produces anything if the soil is not fertile is a moot point.
Okay, let's follow up on that. But I want to give you a chance to think about that. Since we're talking about birds, why don't we get up there and fly away? Because it's very windy. There's a lot of wind going on. So we're going to do wind songs tonight. Here we go. Let's start with this one.
Must have been cold there in my shadow. Never have some light on your face. You were content to let me shut your way. You always walked a step behind. So I was the one with all the glory, while you were the one with all the strength. I want you to know, I know the truth. I would be nothing without you. Did you ever know that you're my hero? You're everything I wish I could be. I could fly. You are the best thing in my life.
this singer.
That was us applauding, by the way, Rochelle and I, which you caught at the end of that. There were many choices, Bette Midler being one, that one being Celine Dion. And there were some others, too. And I just kind of went with Celine because I just thought she'd like really, and she did. And we're here at 888-627-6008. If you're just tuning in, where you been? What have you been doing? What's more important than this, huh? Yeah, what's with you, huh? We're at 7 o'clock, right? 7, we talked about this. What's with that? Late coming now? You missed that amazing, miraculous thing that Rochelle said, and oh, well.
What did I say? What did I say that was wonderful and miraculous?
Well, we're talking.
Tell me, let me know.
You said probably several things, even used the word miracle, I think. So that counts for something. You know, if you use the word, you get like a points like you do when you use your credit. No, like you use your credit card and you buy things and you get points to your trip. Right. If you use certain words, it builds up points. No, this is real. It builds up points to getting a miracle. Like one of the words is
miracle.
Miracle. Yeah. That's
Whoops,
one of the words.
Duck just fell down.
Duck is another word. If you say duck, or you get even more points.
And if you duck when you say duck, it doesn't hit you.
But I want to say if you say ducky, then you get more points because it throws you into your childlike place. And just this morning, I was reading in my meditation about the three things, the foundation for full beinghood. And one of was recognizing the I Am presence as the source of the divine. And then innocence as how the divine regards us. And so it goes back to that place. Any word that brings up a feeling of innocence, like wonder. We talk about that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Wonder. Oh, here's another way I just remembered that you get bonus points. If you do double takes. In other words, when you're really caught off guard, what is a double take really? It's like you look over here. I could show it better than I can describe it probably, but you've seen a double take. You may have even done a double take on a double take because it caught you by such surprise, and that's what double takes are. It's like you look and you think you know what it is, and you look back assuming life's going to continue as it was, and then you realize, wait a minute. Oh, that's something a little different. And
I think that's a good thing to put on a gravestone.
What?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Right. I thought you were going to say double takes.
I'd like to do that again.
I want to go back to this conundrum about a body of people care and another body of people are driven by. They also care, but as Michael and some of these other people point out, a lot of it is driven by fear. And so it is fear then that essentially controls a lot of the world, I would say. And so that brings me back then.
What is the fear?
Total personal annihilation, everything being taken from me, nothing left of me ever, no significance whatsoever, not getting to dinner on time.
All those things.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or not having enough to eat.
Right.
Pain.
Humiliation is
humiliation
a big one.
Saving pain.
Face, losing face.
Yeah, the pain is feeling pain, you know, pain, my feelings get hurt, my body gets hurt. And then I'm nothing.
A pain is a big one, you know, because when you're in pain, it's like it really like hurts. You ever notice that?
Well, it takes over your consciousness.
Yeah,
it really does. I mean, I have a sore finger because I got something in it. I think I'm walking around with a part of something in my finger which doesn't want to go away. But it doesn't hurt all the time. But when it does hurt, it feels like that's all there is. There's nothing. Everything disappears, and all I can feel is my finger. My little finger becomes the center of my universe, and that's all that matters. And I want to make the pain go away.
Well, let me put that in the context of what the progressives are talking about. A big driving force is to meet the needs of the needy. In other words, racial inequality and the effects of it, so that there are like 1.3 billion children right now or something like that starving, and there's a good chance some of them are having an owie, right?
Of
one kind or another.
Yeah, when you're hungry, your tummy hurts.
And not just that, all the other things that could be going wrong with them. So when there's this level of pain, just pure pain in the world, it does cause something to come forth that says, well, why are we doing something about that? Let's do something about that. That's what I believe the spiritual progressives want to do, is to address that and to find ways to ameliorate it and to set goals like in 20 years, every person's fed, period. That kind of goal.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is fed. Everyone has health care. To set a goal for that and to get people oriented toward that. But as he points out, in the me first, do whatever I feel like and I want to do society, that just doesn't happen very much, and certainly not as much as we need.
Well, when we grow up, maybe we will start feeling that way. I mean, because the me
society... We'll grow up?
But, well, we will grow up because that's our path. That is our spiritual path, is to become more and more unified with the whole. And the whole being what I will call the mystery God. And that's the way we're moving. That's what we move towards from the moment we're born. That's what we're moving towards. And it depends on where we start. You know, like I think that we're pretty, as a species... We're still pretty reptilian in terms of the me. I mean, you know what our children, our little babies were like when they were two. Everything was me and oriented me. I want it. You know, our sweet, beautiful little children hit each other because somebody had a cookie and they didn't. And they wanted it. And, of course, I've watched them, and as they've gotten older and more aware of each other, they have also been able to share that cookie. So it seems to me that will happen.
You know,
and,
I saw
And
them.
I think we do have to create the ground, you know, in terms of our families, where that's possible. So if we do have a soul that is ready to come forth, they have ground in which to bloom and blossom.
Well, that's our job as parents, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
To create that soil. And I did want to go back to your comments earlier about, you know, the people who are, you said, well, who do we reach? Who are the people we reach? And I would suggest there is a particular group of people that I feel kind of fit the criteria. And let me back up and give you that criteria. And that criteria, Yeshua expressed in walking through Rome with a young companion. This is from the story of his pre-ministry years from the Arantia book, and one of the reasons...
It's hard to walk through Rome in those days because they didn't have the streets clearly marked.
Right. Right.
Left, left, right, left.
Is it left? Right, where's
right,
the
left,
Senate?
Right, left.
Have you seen, where's it? Hello, in Latin. Have you seen the Senate in Latin? Yes, down the block, take a right, and when you see Noxious Otis, you'll know that you're there.
There was a lot of Noxious Otises in early days because they didn't have very good plumbing systems.
It's true, they really didn't, but it's not too late. That's another thing. So I want to get back to the group that I feel like satisfies these four criteria, and here they are. The first one, and I'll just tell you what they are rather than spending time on the story. The first one is, as he walked by a beggar, and he didn't stop and talk to him, and his companion said, Master, why didn't you talk to this person, reach out to him in your normal way when you walk about? You reach out to people. And he said, because one, he wasn't dissatisfied with himself. Two, he wasn't hungry for the truth. Three, he wasn't willing to ask for help. And four, the eyes of his mind were not open to receive light for his soul.
I love that fourth one.
Well, and but where I was headed with this and why I went to this conference, what I'd hoped to communicate with those people and other people, if you really want to target a group that is ripe for this perspective.
Ripe fruit.
Ripe, ready for the picking. You go to people who are roughly between 15 to 17 years old. That age group. Like sophomores, 16, 15, 16, because that's a very precarious time in our lives. And the brain is going through this huge shift, and you're really, you're not here, you're not there. You know how teenagers are. But as they come out of that, which is around age 15 or 16, they have become philosophically alert. They're able to abstract and concepts and objectify the reality. It's like a birth of a capacity, a mental capacity that happens at that time. And they're still socially extremely self-conscious, right? Boys and girls and all that. And why do you think there's so much drinking? I really think that's directly attributable.
15 and 16?
Well, no, subsequent to that, but it starts then for a lot of these kids and just gets worse and worse. Binge drinking is a huge thing in our college age kids. And I believe that part of it is that need never got filled. It's not been addressed, which is what the spiritual progressives are suggesting. It's not being expressed by the left. There's no place for it. There's even derision on the political left for anyone who even has a spirituality, because it might smack too much of the right spirituality, which they're reacting to.
Yeah, and if we smack into each other, what do we do? I mean, that's not fun at all. It hurts.
It does hurt. And that's why we need to be able to, like, walk very carefully,
walking and humming is okay.
This is what I'm looking for. Here we go.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did need some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the blues they send to meet me won't defeat me. It won't be long till happiness steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
Remember that scene from that movie, Butch Cassidy and Sundance? And the song is playing and he's riding on a bicycle.
Yep.
Raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red.
it's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying me.
Who sang that one?
B.J. Thomas. That was the from the soundtrack of the movie.
You know,
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids. Let me just say one thing more. What do you got? Rochelle was so anxious to say something. Shut my mouth. What do you got? She actually.
It's very interesting because the song almost belies your entire premise that we have to do something. Because the song says we don't have to do anything, just open ourselves up and no, don't worry about anything.
It's not my premise; it's the premise of the progressive that I'm describing.
Yeah, what I'm saying is
it may be my premise. That's what I'm struggling with. Actually, I'm looking at that personally as where do I stand on that issue? Fortunately, I do have a guide in Yeshua. And I can look to his life for not just inspiration, but example. And that whole comment that was made in that episode, if it was true, or even if it's a myth, let's assume that it represents a certain kind of truth, that he was inclined to be aggressive in terms of reaching out to people. And
only those who were hungry for the truth and had all those other attributes.
Yeah. Yeah, not those assholes who were like, you know, closed and, you know, and whatnot.
No, they weren't.
I don't know. But he was aggressively, constantly on the alert looking. And I think maybe that's the distinction, that to be aware that there's much more we could be sharing of the love that we are if we were more alert. So perhaps that's one thing we can do.
Well, I think the alertness has to be for the opening. That we're alert to who's open to receive love and love them. I mean, you can love them with words, you can love them with gestures, you can love them just by smiling at them. But the thing is that they feel seen and heard and appreciated in that moment. And that might be the very thing that's necessary to open that door to their soul. In that moment. Like there was a man in the bank today. You know, he was standing behind me and he said, and it was a long line. And he said, well, yesterday there was nobody here at all. He said, it was really wonderful. And look, every today there's a whole bunch of people here. I said, well, you shouldn't have left. And he didn't laugh, you know.
He didn't laugh?
He wasn't interested in receiving me. He was only interested in giving me his opinions and thoughts and things like that. So, I mean, you laughed because it was a funny thing to say, you know. If you had a whole bank to yourself, why would you go away? You don't come back the next day. It was all crowded.
It's funny.
So that thing of receptivity is a big thing for me. I mean, I'm really trying to be more and more receptive so that I know who's open to that. And most people really aren't. And that's the sad thing. But it's not sad to me because of my awareness of evolution. But it's sad if I want to plant and that's the only soil I see and I want to plant it and I try to push it down somebody's throat or get them to know and to feel and... And, you know, one of the things about the right is they enlist young people constantly enlist young people. You see them at all these gatherings and there's hundreds and hundreds of camps for young people. But are they being fed, led out, the beauty of them being led out, or is a whole bunch of things being put in? Like, I feel like it's force-feeding.
Well, not having been at all those hundreds of camps, I can share the experience of the camps that we went to and why I'm very encouraged to think that the camp situation, which is part of the vision that I've been developing for the program that I call Let's Make It America, and it's basically about recognizing that we have a mission. We have a mission statement. It's stated clearly, articulately in the preamble to the United States Constitution, and this is what I would have hoped to have shared at that event last weekend, but I didn't have the opportunity to the group. But I will share it with you, listener out there. So look and perk up here, because this is the American mission statement, and it goes like this. In order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, but wait, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and last but not least, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this a little while ago, that I said, you know, there are words and you interpret them in different ways, and I know that we've been interpreting this a little bit differently than it has been interpreted in the past. And well, I would like you to interpret your understanding of this mission statement.
I will bring in my interpreter, Sivard Blafi.
Oh, God. Not him. He fumfits.
Okay, never mind. I won't go there. Well, first of all, before I know that's a concern, that because Rochelle knows that I take these and I break them out as follows. Perfect union. What is it in order to form a more perfect union? And I have a chapter in my book on that. Well, what are we talking about here? What is perfect union? What does that mean, perfect? And I think it at the very least, in the beginning, we need to address it in an educational setting, ideally in school or in a camp setting, where we really help people to kind of grapple with that. And for me, the key for education is relevance. To make whatever it is you're trying to educate somebody to relevant to where they are at that moment. And as Rochelle points out, often the notion in order to get to where we're going.
I have a lot of relatives.
I beg your pardon?
That was a left-handed and stupid joke. Relevant.
Did you get that?
I have a lot of relatives.
If you got that, call 888-627-6008 and we'll arrange for a hearing appointment for you at your local hospital.
Errol is being very serious tonight, and I'm being very silly. And I tell you something, you know, the most impactful, not the most impactful, but one of the many impactful things that you've written in order, I love, it says that if we really knew, we'd be laughing. And I do think that what happens when we want to be warriors for change, when we want to, you know, we've got these great ideas, and it is a great idea. There's nothing wrong with the idea. We want everyone to get it. We want to feed it to everybody. We want everyone to get on board. And I don't know. I think I'm at the point, and I don't know if because it's my age or whatever.
Yeah,
where
it's your
I
age.
Find it funny. I find it's like, okay, everybody, we're going to feed you this great thing. We've got this great thing. We're going to feed it to you. And, you know, most people conceptually can get that, but it's getting it down into where we actually become this great idea. We become it.
Well, what if we had a party where we invited some of these over a billion children who are starving
right
now.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. That's like activism. It's not conceptual. It's like...
Well, that's what Matt's saying. He talks about lessening anger. It's not conceptual. It doesn't start from the head.
Right.
It starts out of a passion, and if the passion isn't there...
You don't walk by somebody and leave them hungry, you know, but I don't feed everybody who says they need to be fed. Because I'm a cynic. I don't know that they really are hungry. I think they're just finding an easy way to make money.
Okay,
I
hear that.
That's a terrible thing to say. Oh, my God, I can't believe I said that, but I did.
On the other hand, there's this call for responsiveness, and I think that's what people feel on this spiritual left and want and are wanting to respond to. Not only that, the first three morning speakers were three African Americans, and they had some real passion and articulation about the racism that is still very much with us. And of course, they were just coming off, we all are just coming off this incident in Ferguson, Missouri, and the other incidents of police brutality, if you will, or police crime. And the stirring of anger for these children that are being killed. And one of the speakers had been a policeman, and he went through a litany. He listed about 10 things that need to get changed quick here. So there's like an issue that directly affects people's lives right now, and it's has to do with how the government is functioning and who's running it, so that how are these people, i.e. the policemen, to be held responsible for this problem. And I think he used the statistic that we're talking about 7% maybe of the police force lose control and become brutal. So that means that the police force is getting an A minus in terms of not doing that. So that's another perspective that I think is also important, is some of the rotten things that happen, because they stink and smell and hurt so much, tend to grab our attention. And so we build whole worldviews around those. And so how important is it to step back and say, wait a minute, what about the A-minus number of cops that are dominant? And so often as not, it's a minority that are really...
makes the biggest noise.
Yeah. I mean, look at the people who... with 9/11 and all those people. I mean, how many of them are there, actually, compared to the amount of people on the earth? And yet...
what are you talking about?
Well, in other words, terrorists. Anyone who's in...
Muslims.
Well, I'm not...
Islamic.
No, I'm talking about the people who are actively engaged in
terrorism.
Hostile activity toward other people.
Right. Well, I'm talking about as a group, like, you know, who call themselves Islamic fundamentalists. And they're not the majority of Islamics or Islam. They're not the majority of Islam, that's for sure.
Do you know that group crosses with another group that's called themselves falafel eaters?
Errol, that was a bad joke. I'm not going to even
No, but I
let
think it's important
this.
To...
No, that's a racist joke, and
it's
that's
not
a terrible
a
thing to say on the radio.
All right, let me explain why it's not a racist joke, darling.
He'll just make it worse if you start
God,
to explain it.
My point about this is that we tend to label and regard and make generalities about people, the terrorists, the Democrats, the religious right. And then we react to that and think about it in relationship to some concept we have in our mind that generalizes. One thing I appreciate about Michael Lerner, he draws from a lot of specifics, but it's still these vast generalizations about the them who we identify through a certain word. They're the religious right, they're the Democrats, they're the Navy, and yet these people, all of us, they're the Boy Scouts, we all live lives. Okay. All right. Okay. You want to be that way? You know, I'm going to subject you to another wind song, you know, and you're going to have to live with it.
I don't know how the wind got into this progressive liberal.
Because it's windy out.
And progressive rights, progressive lefts, I don't know, progressive anything.
Because I was thinking wind.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? Must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. answer is blowing in the wind. How many years must a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? How many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? How many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Who sang that?
What do you think?
I'm asking you.
Oh. Peter, Paul, and Mary, of course.
And who wrote that? Who wrote that?
You know, I don't know who actually wrote
Isn't that Bob Dylan?
Yes. Thank you. Oh, my God. Let me say something. We've taken it back down nostalgia lane, haven't we, tonight, with the songs?
No, but that's interesting that these songs are much more relevant to me than the whole conference you went to.
Well, I think that this kind of summed up, and the very question that I'm raising about these issues that are so painfully provocative that need to be addressed. And let's go to where they say the answer. It's blowing in the wind. So let's stop for a minute and look at what, if it's blowing in the wind, what can that possibly mean? What would it look like? How would you catch it?
Don't look at it because it'll get in your eyes.
I was just going to say the dust particles.
Yes, you know, dust particles.
I was thinking,
dust,
what is actually blowing in the wind? Dust particles, cells,
things that aren't held down. So, like belief systems are held down. They don't blow in the wind, for the most part. They get stuck. They get stuck in your brain.
You know what else blows in the wind and doesn't generally fall down? Lots of trees and branches and leaves. There's a lot of that happening.
Yes.
Right now, blowing in the wind outside where we live, where it's rainy and windy, there's that happening. So what that says to me is that if you think about that movement of the tree swaying from side to side, and in my Qigong practice, there's a certain place in the Qigong practice where you actually do go from side to side. So if we drop into that metaphor a little deeper, it's being able to move from side to side.
Without toppling.
Without toppling. And when you move from side to side, that means you're going through the now, the present, the perfect balance constantly. You're constantly hitting it because you can't get from this side to that side without passing through center.
So here's this left and right. And if that isn't polarization, I don't know what is. You know, where the right, where the left. And to find that place, that middle place, where to me, if anything should be happening at this point, it should be how do we take the left and take the right and bring them to center? Because it is from the center that to me, the greatest things happen. It's from the center of my being that the greatest things happen, not when I'm tilted off to one side or to the other side. let's put it into my beliefs or whatever. But when I come from this place of quietude, if there's such a word as quietude, if I come from this place of quietude where I'm not being rattled around, but I'm really go into that place where, what is the wonderful thing is, my mind is not open to receive.
Oh, when the mind is open to receive light for the soul.
Right, when my mind is open to receive light for the soul, I'm thinking of the soul as the center of my being. And my mind, which is going through all these rights, lefts, and have to do this, must do that, all these things. But when I'm being fed, when my soul is being fed, I know the right action.
But it's interesting. I'm thinking of, I think it was Teilhard de Chardin who described the soul is synthesis. That is the fundamental nature of the soul, and that's what's different between the mind. The mind is always compartmentalizing.
Right.
The soul is, by its very existence, it's always a synthesis of meaning and experience. And it grows inside us.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
So it's this synthesis of the right and left. I mean, I'm aware that, yes, compassion and empathy is so important to develop as attributes. But they have to come out of our reality. Because what happens... You know, we've talked about the ego before on this program, and I think what happens is...
But it's no longer listening. We just stopped listening. Didn't like what we had to say about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, my ego just kicks me in the arse every time I...
And I watch it.
every now and then, just to make sure it's still there,
oh,
so that I know it's still there.
Well, let's honor that. There is this conflict that's... fundamental. It was interesting at the conference at one point, Marianne Williamson said, there's an elephant in the room here. And I forgot what she thought the elephant was. And I was thinking, there's an elephant in the room here that nobody's looking at. And that's the fundamental issue of duality.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
And that's the elephant in the room.
Exactly.
And in that sense, we're all guilty of that to the degree that it's us and them. And
right.
That was very much in us and them, which is why I want to go back to my premise about the mission of the United States, because I believe...
This is the word union.
That's right. It's the first thing, to form a more perfect union. And I believe, having looked at this statement so much and so intensely for the last 20 years, when I looked at it and I broke it down and I saw, okay, what is it? That's the collective. I almost think of it like a pyramid, like it's the base of the pyramid, the perfect union. And each side that's growing up, there's four sides to the pyramid, and they get to the top. And the top is securing the blessings of liberty. It's the fireworks. It's the possibilities of freedom. It's fireworks. But the ground is the unity, and what allows that ground to come together and be a ground that builds the four sides of the pyramid are, what's the second one established? Justice. Justice is one of the sides of this pyramid that is growing. Justice. Remember, we got that on our dollar bill. And the next side, what's the next one? So ensured domestic tranquility. Oh, peace. Peace at home. Domestic tranquility. It's not complicated. Peace at home. What does that mean? Peace in our families, peace in our streets, peace in our communities, peace at home. Peace. Where we are, that's not affected by outside forces. Of course it is, totally. But anyway, peace. And then the next one is, and this is the one that I want to really reframe, I have to do it quickly, and that's provide for the common defense. Now, if you shift that to what are we trying to achieve there? Well, we want to feel secure. What else is defense about is to make you feel secure as opposed to insecure, you know. We have this need to feel secure. So security or safety is the third wall. So we've got justice, one wall. We've got peace at home. We've got security and safety. We feel secure, just, peaceful. And then the last wall, promote the general welfare. And that, what is the general welfare if it isn't health and well-being? So the last wall is health. So here you have these beautiful four parts of this pyramid all working together to lead us to what? Our ability to be free and experience not just liberty, the blessings of liberty. And that's something that I feel is really worth considering. So you have it? And
well done. Well done, Mr. Strider. That was so impassioned and beautiful. I love that. Well, I think this, I was looking at this, it's like when I abrogate myself to a something bigger than I am, that I realize that I'm a particle in something larger than I am. And when I unite with that larger thing, the whatever it is, and I allow myself to become that particle of the larger thing, to me, this is the beginning of it all.
And yes, and part of that larger...
And the truth is truly naked in that space.
And as I was saying, the truth of what is that larger thing, and what do we have to deal with if it isn't America? And we have to make some decision, one way or the other, either to get involved, not get involved, how we get involved. But let's take a second to just remind ourselves what this experiment called the United States of America is about. And let's feel a little bit right now. Here we go.
Don't it seem so far away? We're traveling light today in the eye of the storm, in the eye of the storm. Home.
Well, I'd love to continue playing that song for you, but our time is about run out, even though we have eternity right here on this radio wavelength here at Inside Out, The Naked Truth. And we're so glad you can and have been with us, and we hope you'll spread the word. This is on our website, bbsradio.com/insideout. You can check the archives, and we'll be back next week. And thank you, Go Raw, for helping us out here and letting us...
GoRaw.com, and remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.